This is the World War II Radio Podcast.
A date which will live in infamy.
This is London.
We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
Go ahead, Berlin. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Welcome to the World War II Radio Podcast. The goal of this podcast is to present the original radio broadcast from 80 years ago during the days of the war, with the occasional more recent radio program about the war. Today, we have the April 2nd, 1944 edition of CBS World News Today. It includes analysis and updates on the war from Naples, London, Pearl Harbor, Washington, and New York. The World War II Radio Podcast is a Brick Pickle Media production. If you'd like the show, please leave feedback on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Be sure to visit our website at brickpicklemedia.com/podcast, where you can find links to past episodes and other information. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy today's episode of the World War II Radio Podcast.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
World News Today, brought to you by the Admiral Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's Smart Set, and post-war makers of Admiral Major Home Appliances. By shortwave broadcast direct from important overseas stations, as well as leading news centers of our own country, CBS correspondents are waiting to bring you a complete report from the world's political and battlefronts. But first, here's Doug Edwards.
These are the news highlights of the moment. American bombers based in the Mediterranean area have made their fourth attack on German industries in Steyr in Austria. Moscow dispatches say the hour of liberation is near for the Black Sea naval base of Odessa, with two powerful Russian armies closing in on the city along a 175-mile front. In the Far East, the Japanese have cut the important road leading from the Allied supply base at Imphal to Coima in India's Manipur province. And now news direct from Italy and an interview with one of our fighting men from Tennessee. Admiral takes you to CBS Naples. Eric Severide reporting.
The last news bulletin from here announces a heavy raid by Mediterranean Allied air forces on the aircraft and ball-bearing factory at Steyr, 90 miles west of Vienna. That happened today. There was fierce opposition, both from flak and fighters, but we're not told how many planes we lost. The flying fortresses also bombed rail yards in Yugoslavia. Here on the Italian front, the heavy artillery duels continued and patrols were active. Patrols were active is an innocent little phrase you see every night in a communique. I want you to hear now what a patrol is actually like. The time was Thursday, the place a brown knoll called the Pimple in no man's land. The speaker is Lieutenant John Lamb of Knoxville, who at the moment has a big adhesive patch on his lower lip.
I took out four men, and we sneaked out at 3 in the morning. We crept along, well apart. About 5, a German yelled, "Halt!" We were silent, and then they threw a grenade. It exploded only about 10 feet from one of my men, but he was only scratched. I felt a sting in my lower lip, and it began to bleed. A bullet had just grazed me. We backed down and called for mortar fire over our portable radio. They poured it on. Then we went ahead again. About 9, we came to the house.
Well, Lieutenant, how did you know that the Jerrys were inside?
Well, I could hear them snoring upstairs. I posted my men and slipped around the corner. The German stood there just buttoning his trousers. I pointed my carbine and motioned to him to surrender. He stuttered, shouted, then jumped right on me, grabbing the gun. I jerked it away. I wanted a prisoner, but he ran off, and I had to shoot him.
And how about the Germans inside?
They pitched out a grenade, but I ducked in the doorway. Then I jumped in again, threw in 5 grenades. Smoke poured out, and I could hear them moaning. I stepped in again with Sergeant Parr behind me. A sniper's bullet from the hill hit him in the spine. I dragged him inside. He spoke to me for a moment, then suddenly died. There was more firing. One Jerry left alive, tried to man a machine gun at a window, but my men outside killed him. A couple of Germans tried to run away, but we got them too. Just how many Germans died, I don't know, but six for certain.
Well, Lieutenant, there was still enemy on the hill, and it was broad daylight, so how did you get away?
There was a kind of a ditch, a culvert. We dashed down that one at a time, then over low. We had to leave the sergeant's body behind, but the rest of us came back. And how did you feel?
All right. I return you now to CBS in New York.
More news in a moment, but first, Warren Sweeney with a message from Admiral Corporation.
Do you want to save money on foods and still give your family the finest fare they've ever had? Then you'll want an Admiral Home Freezer Locker after the war. With an Admiral Home Freezer Locker, you'll be able to quick freeze vegetables and fruits from your own garden, thus enjoying fresher, more healthful foods the year round. And you can really save a lot of money by buying and storing meats in larger quantities. You'll spend much less time in the kitchen, too, for frozen foods need no preparation. They cook much faster, they contain no waste. Frozen foods retain more vitamins, too, and the danger of taint and spoilage is completely eliminated. Yes, the modern home freezer locker by Admiral will introduce a new, better, thrifty way of life. And it'll be backed by all the prestige and experience of Admiral Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's smart set, and post-war makers of Admiral refrigerators and Admiral electric ranges. Now, here once again is Doug Edwards.
Radio France at Algiers, without confirmation from Allied headquarters, reports that a force of British and American commandos have raided the German-held island of Salta in the Adriatic off the port of Split. Our men are said to have captured 111 Germans and destroyed many installations, among them a wireless station. The French broadcast gives no details on the size of the attacking force. And now for the news here at home, Admiral takes you to CBS Washington, Don Pryor reporting.
Republicans and some Democrats have rallied around the proposal by Palmer Hoyt of Portland, Oregon, for a senatorial investigation of the government's handling of war news. Hoyt used to be chief of the OWI's domestic branch. In a speech at Omaha, he charged that vital news is being withheld from the public and even from Elmer Davis, director of the Office of War Information. Today, Senators Taft and Reed, both Republicans, and Senator O'Mahony, a Democrat, agreed that something might be done about it when Congress reconvenes. Meanwhile, most senators and congressmen are at home and won't be back until April 12th, at the end of the Easter recess. Just now, most of them are more interested in the coming general election than anything else, because all members of the House and 34 of the 96 senators are up for re-election. When they do come back, they'll have a heavy schedule of several important bills. Lend-lease and OPA extension, several appropriation measures, and possibly a new fight in the Senate over poll taxes. Then, most of them will want to adjourn for the summer, probably sometime before the national conventions. Senate Majority Leader Barkley endorsed the proposal yesterday on the condition that all of the important bills be cleared up first. I return you now to Admiral Radio in New York.
British mosquito bombers again raided Germany last night. And now for that news and an interview with a fighting man from San Angelo, Texas, Admiral takes you to CBS London, Larry Lesser reporting.
Again today, the American flyers of our liberators and fortresses are reported blasting Germany in daylight. Day after day, these young men offer their lives in order to spare those of their fellow men who must one day crash through Hitler's Atlantic Wall. The physical strain on our airmen battling for hours over Germany is self-evident. The story of their mental strain has yet to be told. Tonight, Lieutenant Colonel Philip Audrey of Paris, Kentucky, who has just completed 25 bombing missions from Ploesti to Berlin, will tell you how American pilots steel their minds for the strain of combat.
You wonder about the mental processes of a combat airman.
I did, too, before I began to bomb Germany.
Hello, AFHQ.
Now I know that I began to condition myself mentally long before I made my first mission.
We did not pick you up.
By mental conditioning, I mean reasoning with yourself to reach a state of mind where you cannot become a victim of panic. No matter how frightened you get, and I've been truly scared many times, you must not let it paralyze your powers of reasoning.
If you do, it may mean your death and that of your crew members. Long before the takeoff, you must plan your actions should shells explode in the cockpit or if your plane is on fire. A pilot learns early that his greatest danger is that of panic. On every mission, he knows he may be faced by an impossible situation. But as he gets more experienced and has brought home a battle-damaged ship with wounded men, he realizes that these impossible situations are comparatively few. He knows that they are really only emergencies of different degrees of intensity. A cool, experienced crew and pilot will survive them. A crew poorly trained or panicky will not. To prepare himself for battle over Germany, a pilot must foresee every emergency he can possibly imagine and plan to face it. He trains his crew in emergency procedures. They discuss the case histories of men who came back against odds, and they conjecture why other men did not return. To be fully competent, every airman must frame his mind to accept a chance of death. Most Americans love their home more intensely the longer they are away, and most of the boys I've worked with feel that the preservation of their home is worth much more than the chance they must take. Religion is a great help for many airmen. From my experience as a liberator pilot, I can tell you that chaplains of all faiths play a vital role on the American airfields in Britain. They help the men to understand what they believe in is worth fighting and dying for. As a result, no American bomber formation has ever been turned back from its target, no matter what the Germans have done to stop it.
That was Lieutenant Colonel Philip Audrey, Berlin veteran. And this is Larry Lesser returning you now to New York.
For a summary of the situation on the Russian front, here is Columbia's military analyst, Major George Fielding Elliott.
The Russians appear to be pursuing, as their immediate major objective in the south, the encirclement of the German forces still remaining in the southwestern Ukraine. Don't overestimate the number of these troops. It's been variously stated as from 100,000 to 300,000. But undoubtedly a good many of them have been withdrawn westward across the Dniester River. The main Russian advances reported in the last 2 days have been on the semicircular front closing in around Odessa and in the direction of Tiraspol, which is the principal railway crossing of the Dniester, still in German hands. The Russians have not yet claimed any crossing of the River Prut along the frontier of Romania proper. On the western portion of the front, the Russian progress has tended to slow down. They've cut the German railway communications at Kolomea and at Delatine and at Chernavi. And now the Russians appear to be engaged in consolidating their gains and in wiping out the German pockets of resistance at Tarnopol and in the vicinity of Kamenets-Podolsk. The determined resistance of the entirely surrounded German forces in these two areas is denying important communications lines to the Russians, and the fall of these two pockets of German resistance, when it comes, should release Russian energies for further progress. It must, however, be remembered that the Russians in this area are suffering supply difficulties of their own, quite aside from the German grip on the 2 points mentioned, and advances are likely to be followed by successive periods of delay and consolidation. It is notable that the German communique mentions a renewal of heavy Russian attacks on the northern front in the vicinity of Pskov, south of Lake Peipus. It would seem quite likely that the Russians will continue to exert pressure in the north, where a German withdrawal must eventually take place if the Germans are to reconstitute an unbroken front against the Russian armies. This pressure seems likely to extend to the central front as well, where the Germans cannot delay much longer and retiring behind the barrier of the Privet Marshes.
That was Major George Fielding Elliott. Germany this week continued to stress its readiness for the invasion. For a summary of other stories from inside German-held Europe, Admiral takes you to CBS Madrid, Glenn Stadler reporting. We regret that we are not able to make contact with our correspondent in Spain. Allied observers today are waiting for the next step in Finnish-Russian negotiations on Moscow's armistice proposals. Reliable quarters in Stockholm say the Russians are understood to have expressed a willingness to allow Finland to retain the Hango Peninsula and the city of Viipuri in a modification of the original Soviet demands. Dr. Paasikivi, a former Finnish cabinet member, is said to have returned to Helsinki after discussing the new details in Moscow. The Russians now are said to be demanding a high reparation claim from the Finns, so high that some sources in Stockholm fear that the Helsinki government may regard it as excessive. The Finnish cabinet meets on Monday, probably to discuss the latest Russian terms. From Burma, Allied headquarters reports that small parties of Japanese have succeeded in cutting the important Imphal-Koyma road at several places, some 60 miles north of Imphal. A headquarters statement says the Japs are evidently trying to make a major cut in that road and make it stick, thus blocking the entire British network of land communications between central Burma and India. There are other reports, unofficial, that the Japs have cut the Ukrul Road. Ukrul itself is 32 miles to the northeast of Imphal. Allied planes continue to hammer the Japs over a wide front, and heavy bombers have started large fires at a railway station in Rangoon. We're also told that the Allied troops who landed by glider deep in Burma several weeks ago under command of the late General Wingate had to stop their air operations for a few days to battle Jap troops which had infiltrated to the perimeter of the Allied airstrip. But the enemy has now been cleared out of the sector and air operations are continuing. There's still no word from the heavy Navy task force which hit Palau earlier this week. But now for a summary of latest developments in the Central Pacific and an interview with a bombardier from Providence, Rhode Island, Admiral takes you to CBS Pearl Harbor, Webley Edwards reporting.
In a few brief months, the Central Pacific Air War has moved forward between 1,500 and 2,000 miles. The 7th AAF was bombing the Gilberts last fall. They're now giving Truk a regular going over. Of greatest importance on the road to Truk is the eastern Caroline island of Ponape. It was here the Americans gave a Jap community its first sustained blitzing in history. True, Tokyo was hit in a quick-running strike, but at Ponape, the 7th AAF blasted a small city to destruction. Here with me in Hawaii is Lieutenant Edward V. McDermott of Providence, Rhode Island, bombardier of the B-24 Liberator named Tandaleo, because, as the boys say, of its white cargo. He was in the first squadron to make this historic blitzing of Ponape. And, Lieutenant, will you tell us about it?
Ponape was the principal bastion between our bases and the prime air target of Truk. Our job was to reduce it as an effective base for the Japs. As the only major city between Honolulu and Truk, it was for us a target of great importance. I caught my first glimpse of it while we were circling through the clouds. It lay stretched out before us, the biggest civilization we had seen in months.
What was the procedure?
Our liberators went in over a period of days in successive waves with 100 to 500 pounders and firebombs. The reason for destroying the city was, of course, its military value as a supply and headquarters center for the Jap airfields and installations. Our incendiary attack was the first concentrated use of firebombs in the Central Pacific and the first all-out blitz against any Japanese city.
Did you meet much opposition?
Well, Ponape is a difficult target because it is often obscured by clouds, often necessary to circle above the city for 20 minutes to find a hole to get our bombs through. But the Jap Act can't see us through so well either.
How did it feel to drop your bombs over a Japanese city?
I think we can probably bomb any part of it faster than the Japs can rebuild it. Ponape will still be a tough target, and we'll probably keep right on hitting it. But you might say that Ponape is no longer a formidable link in Japan's island defense chain.
Lieutenant McDermott, after 17 long-range missions in the Pacific, you're having the customary rest period and soon will be going back. What's next in your thoughts?
Naturally, to get the war over with as soon as possible and then go home. The blitzing of Ponape City was really only a rehearsal for what we have to do in the future and for what we expect to give to Japan proper. No matter what we do to the islands in between, we never take our eye off the ball. Japan and Tokyo.
And good luck to you, boy. Lieutenant Edward McDermott, bombardier on a B-24 Liberator, was in the first squadron ever to give a sustained blitzing to a Japanese city, the city of Ponape, on the road to Truk in the Carolines. This is Webley Edwards at Pearl Harbor, returning you to Admiral Radio in New York.
And now for an interview with a lieutenant commander in the Navy Medical Corps. Admiral again takes you to CBS Washington, Don Pryor reporting.
Last night in Constitution Hall, a crowd of Washingtonians saw the world premiere of a new movie called The Story of Dr. Wassel. And here is the real-life hero, Dr. Corydon M. Wassel. You probably remember the story because President Roosevelt told it to the nation in a speech on this network 2 years ago. Dr. Wassel was a missionary in China when the war began. He was nearly 60 years old, but he volunteered for service in the Navy and was commissioned a lieutenant commander. He went to Java and was assigned the job of caring for the wounded officers and men of the cruisers Houston and Marblehead. When did you go to Java, Dr. Wassel, and how did you get there?
I arrived in Surabaya, Java, on the SS Polk on January the 27th, 1942. And I left on the last ship after the Japs had landed on March the 3rd, 1942.
When Dr. Wassel had his wounded men with him and got them safely to Australia, how many were there, Dr. Wassel?
There were 47. I lost five of them. Two died on the train going from Jakarta to Cilacap and on the south coast of Java. Three died at Jokja or Jakarta. And out of the 42 who were left, I got 41 out. Only one, a new Navy wounded man, was taken prisoner.
Well, do you know that he was taken prisoner? Have you heard from him since?
Yes, his name was on one of the prisoner lists that came through just a short time ago.
Well, you had to take all these men all the way from the north coast of Java to the south, didn't you? How did you do it in the face of the Japanese invasion?
Well, it wouldn't have been possible if it hadn't been for the superb bravery and determination of the Dutch, especially one young man, a Dutch seaman, I can't give you his name, who was assigned to me as a liaison officer. He arranged for the train that took us from Cilacap, Java, to Jakarta, and saw that we had everything we needed. I've recommended that his own government give him an award for the work he did.
Well, Dr. Wassel finally got his men out of Java on the MS Jensen, the last ship that made it to Australia.
It was hardly even a ship. It was a little 1,800-ton coastal vessel that was supposed to carry not more than 180 people. But when we left Cilacap, there were 700 or 800 people aboard, men, women, and children. The Japs came over and machine gunned us off of the south coast of Java. And Captain Price put in to shore. Many of the passengers decided to leave the ship right there.
Well, why did you stay there, Dr. Wassel?
Because the boys wanted to. I went below and asked each one of them in turn whether he wanted to go ashore and be safe but a prisoner, or to stay on the ship with almost certain chances of being killed.
And they decided to go with you, and Dr. Wassel got them on down to Australia, and all of them got home safely. I return you now to Admiral Radio in New York.
Some late reports. The German radio broadcast a few minutes ago that the Russians have broken into the Ukrainian strongholds of Tarnopol and Kovel. And the Swiss radio just announced that Swiss airspace again was violated this afternoon by what the Swiss radio called isolated planes. The Russian news agency TASS reported this morning that Chinese troops from Sinkiang, China's northwestern province, violated the border of the Mongolian People's Republic late in 1943. TASS says Chinese planes bombed towns and villages and strafed Cossacks fleeing from Sinkiang. The background is this. Well-informed sources are quoted as saying that at the end of last year, Sinkiang authorities began a forced evacuation of a great number of Cossacks from the Altai Mountain District to the southern district of Sinkiang. And now Warren Sweeney with a word from Admiral Corporation.
We know that many of you plan to completely renovate and remodel your homes when the war is won. Your plans probably include new furniture, and there'll be an Admiral radio in a superbly styled cabinet to match the decorative effect of your home. Admiral will keep up its tradition of fine cabinets to add grace and charm to any surroundings. There'll be period designs for those who want them, or if your choice runs to the more modern, there'll be an Admiral to suit your taste. And you may be certain you'll find enduring construction as well as matchless beauty. With a cabinet that is an exquisite piece of furniture, plus the dependability and fine performance of the Admiral radio and Admiral automatic record changer, you'll be happy to choose an Admiral, America's smart set, built for the world's largest manufacturer of radio phonographs with automatic record changers. The appearance of personnel of the armed services on this program does not necessarily constitute an endorsement of our product for the armed services. Despite the excellent progress of America's huge synthetic rubber program, we still face a critical shortage of tires for civilian use. Military demands make it impossible to meet normal civilian requirements. The only answer to this tire shortage is strict conservation. Every car owner is urged to conserve his present tires to the utmost and have them recapped as soon as they need it. America's rubber-borne transport must be kept rolling. World News Today is brought to you each Sunday at this hour by Admiral Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's smart set, and post-war makers of Admiral Refrigerator, Admiral Home Freezer Locker, Admiral Electric Range. Be sure to listen again next Sunday when Admiral brings you World News Today by shortwave, direct from leading news centers of the world. Warren Sweeney speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The WBBM Air Theater, Wrigley Building, Chicago 11.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode of the World War II Radio Podcast. We hope these old-time radio programs entertain and help you learn more about what Americans experienced during the war 80 years ago. Be sure to visit brickpicklemedia.com/podcast for past episodes and more information